Welcome to another edition of Center Stage Minnesota. Center Stage Minnesota is our show that focuses on the talents of Minnesota musicians. And we've got an hour of programming ahead with a feature that is another installment in our series of called Salmon Friends, which is Sam Miltich, accomplished former prodigy. Now he's too old for that, but he's certainly is one of the more talented jazz players probably in the world. He has been talking to other jazz musicians that are in the Minnesota music scene. Conversation, sort of interview, a little bit of both, sort of maybe kind of in between. This time it is with jazz cellist Martha Larson. And we'll also hear a short segment that was featured on National Public Radio with a local professor and author, and the list goes on, Anton Troyer, talking about some of his favorite music. Center Stage Minnesota is an original series produced by Northern Community Radio and broadcast on the stations of the Ampers Network. Find us online at kaxe.org. Program support comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. We're going to hear from, we're going to start off the show with something from an act that you can, or a person that you can see this Saturday at the Blue Ox in Bemidji from his Rooster release from 2007. This is Charlie Parr with Public Record Rag.
Well, my mama gonna read about me, she's gonna read about me all day long. But she never seen my name in print, never seen my face on the TV. Then a woman would come over to her house for coffee or my tea. She called me a bum, said nothing but a tramp, wouldn't let me in the front, she'd throw me out the back. Now, my mama gonna read about me, she's gonna read about me all day long. Out of Connor Man's mile and said, get lost and pull out a 44. But I grabbed that gun and I shot it first. He fell on the floor just shaking his fist. That's gonna be the total tale, gonna tell him one all day long. Well, my mama gonna read about me, she's gonna read about me all day long. My mama gonna read about me, she's gonna read about me all day long. Gonna read about the gun and stole the car, gonna read about the man and liquor store. Well, my mama gonna read about me.
to do. My boss yelled, he's dead to me now. My boss kicked me out.
Record just in to the Northern Community Radio studios from the Bad Companions, a group of guys that include some of the veterans from Mick Sterling and the Stud Brothers, and probably most notably to me, the Vibro Champs. Sort of a super group of sorts made up of the who's who of rockabilly for some time down in Minneapolis. The Bad Companions, and that's a cover. This is a great record. It's called What Me Worry, and it's a really great record, very solid almost from beginning to end. But that is the first cover I've ever heard anybody do a song by the Minutemen, Jesus and Tequila, and I just had to play that as the first track that I played off of this. The Bad Companions on Center Stage Minnesota from What Me Worry. We heard Jesus and Tequila, Charlie Parr before that. Rooster is the release, and that's a 2007 release, and we heard Public Record Rag to start out. One of the better releases this year by anybody, let alone somebody with Minnesota roots. Bob Mould, I'm not even sure. I know he doesn't live in Minnesota anymore, but he started with Husker Du and Sugar. Both bands were based out of Minnesota, and by Minnesotan standards, we usually claim anybody that has achieved what Bob has achieved, no matter where they live these days. And I saw him at First Avenue here not too long ago in September, and what a show, what a fantastic show he put on, and he was definitely feeling at home. Silver Age is the new release from Bob Mould. He's back driving the car right down the center of the road, and in terms of rock and roll, the kind that he makes anyway. This is from Silver Age called Briefest Moment. We'll be right back. Bob Mould's counterpart in Husker Du wrote probably 40% of the songs that appeared on their records. I think Bob's songs were a little more sonically intense and interesting, but the songs that Grant Hart wrote were definitely, in my opinion, lyrically more interesting. And that's from Grant Hart's solo release from 1999, Good News for Modern Man. Nobody Rides for Free is the track on Center Stage, Minnesota. My name is Charlie Polkerbeck. Coming up, we're going to hear an interview between Sam Miltich and Martha Larson, a jazz cellist. Martha joined Sam to talk in a series that we are calling Sam and Friends. And I think this is the fourth or fifth installment of that series. Very excellent jazz musician talking to other excellent jazz musicians. Bob Mould from Silver Age, just before that, from the 2012 release, we heard Briefest Moment. This is Center Stage Minnesota. It's our show that focuses on the talents of Minnesota musicians. Before we hear that interview from Sam Miltich and Martha Larson, we're going to hear from Sam Miltich in the Clearwater Hot Club with a Django Reinhardt song. Improvisation at number 6 from Sam Miltich and the Clearwater Hot Club, doing a song written by Django Reinhardt. Sam Miltich recently interviewed Martha Larson, a jazz cellist who lives in the Twin Cities, and he began by asking her about when she began to play the cello instead of the piano.
I first started playing the cello in my elementary school orchestra in about fifth grade. Somewhere between fifth and sixth grade. I started with a love of the alto sax. I think I'd been watching a lot of Happy Days and thought that would be just the coolest. So I started in band, and I realized pretty quickly that I would rather play an instrument with my hands than with my mouth. I think I was kind of turned off by the spit factor on the sax and made me a little lightheaded. So I had a friend that was playing the cello, and I got to try hers out, and I just, it's one of those things where it's just a natural fit. It just kind of spoke to me, and I said, this is my instrument. And that was probably, gosh, 25 years ago, and here I am, still at it.
I know from speaking with you in the past that, you know, music was a definitely a part of your household, your upbringing. Now, your father, he plays piano. I know that you were exposed to a lot of great recordings when you were young, and I just wanted to ask you how, you know, influential listening to some of the recordings that your folks played for you were on your decision to pursue music.
Yeah, it definitely had an influence. My dad taught me how to pound on the piano at a pretty early age, And it was something that just kind of clicked with the way my brain worked, I guess. He taught me a lot of boogie-woogie songs and things that were in kind of a blues form. And so I think learning that at such an early age, it really ingrained that sort of chord progression, which is the basis of so much rock and roll and a lot of jazz as well. Certainly, as a music lover himself, he's playing a lot of music. And I especially remember, you know, of course, a lot of Simon and Garfunkel and Beatles and things from his youth. But we listened to the Jazz Image every week in Minnesota here. And I think that that was really my early jazz music education, because every Saturday that would be on, whether we were actively listening or it was just drifting through the house, I just got so familiar with great players through that program. And then I went on to study them on my own, study jazz at college a little bit, and of course recreationally my entire life.
So, of course, you were trained as a classical cellist. At what point did you decide you're going to make the leap to jazz?
Well, that's a good question, Sam, because I'm a big promoter of non-classical cello in addition to classical cello. I would say it's an instrument that's a lot more flexible than it's been given credit for. Like I say, I was playing a lot of jazz piano, especially ragtime, boogie-woogie, stuff my dad was feeding me. So I was doing that on piano, meanwhile learning to play classical cello. But I can attribute a couple of things to the light bulb of kind of merging those two things together. One was my teacher as a kid was very creative, and she would have us explore tunes outside the regular classical range. It wasn't like the main part of our lessons, but she would get groups together for quartets that would play Beatles songs or would play, you know, soundtracks from movies. So that kind of opened my eyes to that. And then in college, I had a lot of friends playing in bands who wanted to put cello on their albums. So they were having me listen to, you know, Rolling Stones and the Bee Gees and ELO and all these groups that had great string sections from really the rock era. And I started to say, you know what, I can do this, and it's not that unusual. So that just started with really kind of a more of a pop music, rock music accompaniment. At one point in college, I did an album, kind of a spoof album, and I needed a string bass because I wanted it to be kind of a rockabilly tune. And being in college and not really having a string bass player on hand, I just used my cello for it. And I think it was from that moment on that I thought, I can merge these things, and I really love jazz, and that's really where I want to turn my cello focus. So from then on, it's been primarily jazz, still playing classical to keep my chops up, but I've been performing mostly with jazz.
Well, you know, I have to bring up these names because they're players that influence both you and I. When did you first discover guitarist Django Reinhardt and the violin player Stefan Grappelli?
Oh, man, yeah, they are great indeed. They were part of this collection of music that I listened to with my dad. And then I was a big Yo-Yo Ma fan, and he did an album called Anything Goes with Stefan Grappelli. But I remember getting, maybe in about high school, a Greatest Hits from Django Reinhardt. It's kind of, I know we've talked about this, Sam, it's those opening chords on a few of these tunes. Django's Castle, which was also, of course, the Jazz Image theme for that radio show. And other tunes that, just from that opening chord, it just fell in love. I just thought, I love this sound. I want to learn more about this sound and this guy. And it came to me in Chicago that there was a guy teaching Django Reinhardt's style guitar. And he's a musician by the name of Alfonso Ponticelli, who's kind of the ringleader of the Chicago gypsy jazz scene. And I brought my big, fat, cowboy-style kind of campfire guitar, a big Martin, to the class just so that I could learn how to make that sound myself. And Alfonso found out that I was a cellist, and he said, why are you playing guitar? Why didn't you bring that cello over here and play some gypsy jazz on cello? And I thought, yeah, why not? So that's kind of how I connected my own playing with the music of Django and Stefan Grappelli, but they are certainly two of my absolute favorite musicians.
Yeah, well, you and me both, kid. Thank you. So, Martha, when you were beginning to learn gypsy jazz, did you find any barriers or difficulties in learning this music as a result of sort of lack of a pedagogy for that particular instrument, the cello, in this genre? Of course, we know, you know, there's good teaching methods for the guitar and, you know, violin stuff. How did you tackle the issue? And then the other question I had was, I know the cello is tuned in fifths like a violin, and were you kind of able to take certain licks from Grappelli or other jazz violinists that laid out fairly well on the neck of the cello?
I have thought about that deeply and broadly. Gosh, I would say when I first started thinking through jazz, I started taking licks actually from horn players and bass players. And a lot of Miles Davis type stuff that wasn't quite as notey, because I think the challenge for the cello as opposed to violin or even guitar is it's just a bigger instrument, and so you just kind of have to manhandle it in a different way, and there's a lot more area to cover. So I was finding I couldn't at first really even achieve some of the really lightning-fast licks that a guitarist or a violinist will do by nature of just the need to move across a larger area. So I've developed that technique kind of listening to these horn players and bass players first, and then really just borrowing pedagogy from guitar teachers and from violin teachers. I've most recently kind of discovered Tim Kliphaus's CDs, which are great because he talks a lot about bow control. I'd say it's not so much the fingers, but the bow that is really the trick to playing the cello well, because that technique has such finesse. And when you're playing in classical, you're really trying to get a rich, full tone and generally play very clearly and very loudly, or high dynamic range, but very, very much in contact with the string. And playing for jazz, there's a lot of ghost notes and a lot of slides and a lot of kind of odd vibrato patterns and lack of vibrato, which really goes against the grain of what you learn as a classical cellist. So a lot of that I've developed just basically using my ears and getting away from music on the page, and playing with my ears while also borrowing some pedagogy from violin and guitar teachers.
We're speaking with classical and jazz cellist Martha Larson. Martha grew up in the Twin Cities area and has played for many years in both the Twin Cities and the Chicago jazz scene. You know, Martha, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about writing and arranging music, and I know you've been doing quite a bit of writing and arranging lately, and what are some of the different influences and ideas that you try and bring to your own writing?
I am always striving, whether I'm arranging a standard tune or whether I'm writing something original, I'm always striving to give a listener enough familiarity to get into the tune and really feel like they can grasp it and enjoy it, but also enough kind of right turns and surprises that it remains interesting and it captivates people, not just the first opening chords, but little twists and turns during the tune. So a lot of the techniques that I use are changing the weight of the ensemble. So maybe we're all playing together and suddenly everybody drops out and it's just a snare drum, or, you know, maybe it's a bass solo with coordinated hits by the band, so there's some sort of pattern underneath. But I love to integrate those elements of surprise, because I think that's what makes not only a live show, but a recording, especially a live show, but also a recording, kind of have that freshness every time you listen.
How does the writing process begin for you? What kernel of inspiration, like, is there a type of structure you'd like to work within? I know that, you know, sometimes, you know, poets will take a certain kind of structure and work within that, and I know musicians can do the same. Or is it something that's just more spontaneous and something that the muses just sort of bring to you into your mind? What is the process for you?
Yeah, I wish I had this one nailed, because then I could write more. But so far, I would say the best writing that I do is when my head is really clear of other thoughts. You know, my day job or my family issues or whatnot. When I'm really clear of mind, usually driving in the car or taking a run, something like that, and it is literally the muses just kind of sparking away and suddenly just something comes to me. And the advent of the iPhone has been amazing, because now I have a little recorder on me at all times. And the best thing has been to be able to catch those snippets when they're not fully developed, but they're really just a phrase, or they're just a melody, or something I've heard, you know, just walking around town, and I can catch those things and come back to them later and develop them further into something that, that constitutes a full tune. But there are occasions when I have to basically give myself an assignment and say, I'm gonna write a minor blues, and I'm gonna work on a minor blues. And usually when I give myself assignments, the first thing that I come up with tends to be kind of boring, or at least pretty straightforward. And the challenge at that point, and the fun of it, is embellishing that very basic, straightforward assignment into something that's truly creative and artistic. So I've gone about it both ways. I think the most fun is when the muses strike, because it really is that divine inspiration. But at times when I have to give myself an assignment, I can make that work for me by coming back to it with a fresh mind and thinking, now, how can I, it's getting a little bit same here, slow here. You know, what can I do to pep this up? And just kind of getting my mind in that mode of relaxation enough to hear a tune without the other noise of the day interfering.
You know, I want to talk to you about your interest in wanting to sort of connect the lines, connect the dots between classical and jazz and folk and pop music. And, you know, how are you sort of personally approaching that in your own music and performances these days? And what do you see as some of the links between those different styles?
That's exactly one of those things that I love to explore is, you know, when pulling together a jazz album for people that are primarily well-versed in jazz, putting in a musette or a tango or something more classical, it's kind of one of those things where people can rediscover these other styles while being in the mode of listening to jazz. They're suddenly rediscovering tango or rediscovering folk music. And I think that's why it's been enjoyable, Sam, for us to play together, because you really emphasize that in your playing is honoring all these different musical styles and finding a place for all of them in a live gig. It's not necessarily a concert venue all the time. Sometimes you're just playing at a restaurant for people that are there to have a glass of wine. The fun of it is to really catch their ear with something they forgot they knew. And I think the folk tunes do that really well, partly because a lot of their structures are similar to the jazz structure with repeated sections and themes that return. But also, it's just the rowdiness of these songs. And I think the fun part is when you can take a classical tune and remind people how much rock and roll there was or is in classical music. I mean, Bach, as everyone says, is kind of one of the greats of rock and roll, because they write lines that, you know, are akin to something maybe Metallica would be playing today on an electric guitar rather than a harpsichord. And I love finding those connections and really displaying them for the public. That's really one of the best parts about putting a show together.
I'm speaking with cellist Martha Larson. Of course, you write music, and you've played classical and jazz, and you know, improvisation is sort of the keystone of jazz in my mind. It's sort of an elusive thing, I guess. But how do you prepare yourself for improvising? Is it another deal where you've practiced specific licks or specific lines that you've come up with, or do you try and tap into those and then go to sort of a more spontaneous place while on stage? And what's going through your mind as you're improvising? Do you find that there is a link between your spontaneously improvised lines in a solo and the type of lines that you are creating and writing on the page for one of your compositions?
When I'm improvising, there is a little bit of studying licks, and certainly licks that really work well for whatever reason. I like them personally. There's something that people know and love. There's something I'm trying to reflect, you know, or give a reflection of someone like Django Reinhardt. And it's great to have those licks and to practice those licks in all the keys and just really know how they lay out on the instrument so that you can insert them when it's appropriate. But I try not to rely completely on licks, or even, you know, more than I would say 20-30% of the time. Because the real magic is when someone is speaking through their instrument as though they're having a conversation. And that is something that is truly unique every time it happens. So if you get too stuck on licks, you can start to sound like a tape recorder that's just getting played over and over again. And so I try to literally think about my cello as an instrument of the voice. You know, it can be fun because you you need to not only play notes, but you need to have space to take breaths, to think or to interact with your other musicians like you would if you were conversing. And I also sing a lot, so I think singing helps me connect what I'm hearing in my head with what I'm getting out of my hands, because sometimes there can be such a disconnect between the head and that what you're executing through your hands on your instrument. And I think singing for me really connects those pieces. As far as the writing, certainly a lot of the writing is something where I'm singing in my head or even literally singing, and I'm capturing something that I'm hoping is original. Sometimes, of course, we inadvertently plagiarize things we love, but I'm trying to capture, again, that conversation so that it's unique and it's original every time. It's like speaking more than rote repetition of certain licks.
I just love getting these different takes on improvisation and composition from lots of different musicians and how they conceptualize it, because the human mind is a magnificent thing. As is your music, Martha. It's really fun to talk to you about it, and just love working with you and love listening to all the new stuff you're coming up with. So I just want to thank you for being with us here on Northern Community Radio.
You bet, Sam. Thanks for having me. It's a real honor.
Thanks to Sam Miltich for conducting that interview for Center Stage Minnesota with Martha Larson, Twin Cities jazz cellist that has one foot in the Chicago scene, one foot in the Minneapolis scene. I'd like to play some more music from her, but she's kind of, you know, she's a player, and she hasn't, she's played in a number of acts, but there's not a lot of stuff where she's prominent that as a one of the one or two key players. So there's not a lot of a, she doesn't have her own CD out, I guess is what I'm saying. But she is interesting to talk to, because that's a person making a living playing jazz cello and living in Minnesota. And I think that's just an interesting thing to get an inside look at what it's like to be a working musician in Minnesota. Coming up, we're going to hear a segment from National Public Radio that features local man Anton Troyer talking about some of his favorite music. First, I'll let you know also that there is some other music coming up this weekend. Saturday, you can see the Everett Smithson Band, which is called Cajun Blues, I believe is what they call themselves. And I have heard, not seen them myself, but I've heard good reports from some Northern Community Radio volunteers. Everett Smithson Band will be playing on Saturday at 4:30 at the Bemidji Public Library, and they will be down in Nevis later that evening, starting at 8 p.m. at Terrapin Station. Of course, Charlie Parr on Saturday at the Blue Ox.
Indecision occupies my time, sitting on a bar stool and struggling to choose between the sour mash from Kentucky and a good old Wisconsin friend of mine. Perhaps the ribbon's proof enough to be left without question, but it's time for change. Locked up out of reach, but still I faintly hear a soothing voice of past calling me. Now my beer drinking days are dead and gone. Never in my youth was I deprived. I feel used to live my life so carelessly, wasting away the nights to greet the dawn. I don't concern myself with quality. I set the bar no higher than the rail.
Lowered expectation makes it so hard to fail. I keep on passing around the community. Thompson lives right down the road. He'll be your best friend for only $7.99. Always entertaining and provides the best of times. Feeding every need to load. Everyone's a critic till they try. So quick to rely on a company they keep. Communities get built at night when most choose to sleep. Catching up on rest when they die.
This is Anton Troyer, and I'm listening to Buffalo Moon by Brulé. I really love this group. They have a great combination of traditional native music and dance repertoire, as well as lots of modern influences. It's a great hybrid that speaks to exactly what it means living in two worlds as a native person. And I really also enjoy listening to the group Little Otter. They, among other things, when they're not singing at powwows, also come to the ceremonial big drums in Mille Lacs and other communities and are some of the greatest singers we have around. They have maintained a real strength of singing and ability to work together, and have maintained traditional musical forms in a way that is kind of above and beyond what a lot of other powwow groups do. And I'm also listening to Pipestone Singers. I really love to go to powwows and Native American cultural events, and Pipestone is one of the groups that really has dominated that music genre, I guess among the top 40 of powwow music today. And I know all of the singers really well. They are, you know, some of the most talented in all of Indian country.
That was author and Native American history and language professor Anton Troyer telling us what's playing in his ear, including Buffalo Moon by Brulé, Flag Retire by Little Otter, and Pipestone's Crazy Love Life.
from Old Times, a release from 2009 from the Red Lake Singers. That is a traditional powwow song. And before that, we heard a segment with Anton Troyer and Michelle Martin from National Public Radio, with Anton running down some of his favorite music. And then right before that was a track from Useful Jenkins from their Festival Express release. We heard Old Thompson. This is Center Stage Minnesota, and Center Stage Minnesota is an original series produced by Northern Community Radio and broadcast on the stations of the Ampers Network. Find us online at kaxe.org. Program support comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. I'm Charlie Polkerbeck, and it's been fun bringing you another edition of Center Stage Minnesota. He opened the show. He's going to close the show. The man you can see over at the Blue Ox in a couple of evenings from now, Charlie Parr, from his King Earl release. This is Jefferson Street Express.
Long. clock on the dash, went off at 3 o'clock a.m. Lord, I rubbed my eyes and I hit the key. I was on the road again. I was on the road. I was on the road.